Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 95. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we are here to talk to you about Rick Riordan Presents crossover ideas. This kind of came to us like last second last week, but it seemed really fun.
It begat organically from our minds.
Yes.
As we were talking about both City of the Plague God and then also Fury of the Dragon Goddess, mm-hmm. some character descriptions and things we learned about them just felt like we needed to talk about other characters
yes.
in the RRP, and then it just spiraled because we were like, this is fun, we should just keep doing this.
Yeah. As I was going through trying to come up with cool combinations, I realized, like, man, there are still a lot of books that I haven't read.
There are so many. Because yeah. I had the same thought. I was like, I feel like we've read so many of them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then I'm like, we haven't even started. Especially me, who hasn't finished Arushad, hasn't, you know, like, there's yeah. so many fewer than I've read than you even.
Yeah.
And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
There's just so many good books.
There are. Yeah.
It's hard to keep up.
It is very difficult to keep up. If you would like to contact us, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com.
Now I never like, stop being entertaining.
I know. Now I feel like I have to be threatened with it. We do not have a lot of news and updates this week. Part of it is because we're recording slightly earlier than usual, but also there just hasn't been a ton. We're kind of in a lull right now, and especially, I mean, there hasn't really even been news about the show either, but that also kind of, you know,
yeah. As far as the strike goes, it goes on. I know there's been some talk about things, they're starting to get into the maybe we should get back to the table thing, but not a lot of progress. So it's not even like a ton to talk about as far as the strike
yeah.
goes either.
Yeah. If you're on TikTok or any of the other social media accounts, really, then you've probably seen that Rick has copies of the UK version of Chalice of the Gods. It is very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
And he dedicated it to Walker, Arian, and Leah, saying, here's to new beginnings.
It is the single cutest thing he could have possibly done with this book.
Yeah.
Like, we all kind of know that the reason Chalice of the Gods exists is because Disney said, hey, maybe we should, you know, do you want to write a new book to go with it? And he was like, sure. And then, boom, it was born. Like, that, it, you know, it works out that, of course, he would be dedicating it to them. But it never occurred to me that he would dedicate it to them.
Yeah.
And so when I saw it, I was just like,
imagine what Walker's thinking.
I know, you know, right?
That probably means so much to him.
He's probably like, oh my god, that's my name.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's basically a big star, but at the same time, it's like, that's my name.
Yeah. That, I mean, it would still be exciting.
Oh,
no
yeah.
matter how big you are,
right?
Who you are, anything like that, I would be ecstatic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Chalice of the Gods comes out in about a month and a half, so we don't have too much longer to go until then. I'm really excited to jump into it, and we'll see.
Can I also say how excited I am that we've decided to go chapter by chapter, because
yeah.
it means I don't have to try and, like, take it all in at once. Like,
yeah.
I could, and I absolutely would eat it up, I'm sure. But it's, like, the idea that, like, we're gonna read it, and I don't have to do extra work to read it. Like, it's, I'm gonna do one chapter at a time,
yeah.
which is going to be impossible. But we're gonna do it. I'm actually really excited about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be fun to really go through it chapter by chapter, and yeah, it's gonna be awesome. Also, it's not very big. It's like 280-ish pages, so that's also very nice.
We love an author who doesn't need to write a 600-page book.
Yes.
Because there are too many of them now.
Yeah.
It's fine on the occasion, especially for fantasy, I give them a break because it's really hard to fit a lot into a book.
Right.
So, like, I give fantasy authors some leeway, but we need to get back to the 200-page book and
yeah.
the 250-page book and the
150-page book.
I love reading novellas. I feel so powerful when I read novellas. I'm like, yeah, I just read a whole book in 2 hours. This is great.
I just burned through this. Like, yeah. So much reading. Look at my stack. Like, you get all of these books read, and you're like, look at them.
Yeah. That's actually, if anybody's caught in reader's block, or you're in kind of a book burnout right now, that's how I kickstarted myself out of it, is I started just reading novellas, because if you don't like them, you can either put them down right away, or you get through them so fast and you're like, hey, I still finished a book, and it doesn't take up as much time. So that's a good tip from me to you.
And if you are reading a genre that doesn't have tons of novellas, because I know that's really common in romance, but it's not as common outside of it, try like short stories. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're looking for something like Rick's stuff, try some of his short stories that are in the Percy Jackson world. There are a million, like, you know, I know you can find, like, author short stories on their websites, too. Like, tons of my authors have written one-shots or one-scene kind of things that they didn't have anywhere to publish it, but they wanted to write it for this character, and it didn't fit in the book, so onto their website it went. And so now, occasionally, when I'm really feeling it, and I'm like, I just need to read something else. Like, I can't... I'll go to one of my author's websites and, like, check out some one-shot they did.
Yeah.
It only takes me 20 minutes, a half an hour to read, but I feel like, okay, I visited with those characters, my brain is happy now, I can move on and go read something
else. Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because if you're trying to figure out which Rick Riordan Presents author to read, you can pick up Cursed Carnival and Other Calamities, because...
And each one of them is a short little story.
Yeah, yep. And figure out, like, whose writing you like best. Also, a lot of the Rick Riordan Presents authors have done anthologies, so you can jump into one of those if you're looking for specific things. They have romance ones, sci-fi ones, fantasy ones, a whole bunch of those sort of things.
Tons of also, YA ones in the last few years, too.
Yeah, and I will say, like, horror and sci-fi is also pretty good at, like, novellas.
Good.
And if you look at, like, Tor's catalog, I usually get a lot of those things in the mail.
Very cool.
For, like... novellas and just books that are on the shorter side. So,
yeah, we'd love that.
Lots of options.
Mm-hmm.
The last bit of news comes from Reed Riordan, who wrote Camp Half-Blood Middle of Summer Check-In, which actually ended up being a lot of fun. And I usually don't read through, like, the Reed Riordan articles on air, but there were a couple of people whose check-ins I thought were really funny and kind of relevant and kind of, like, spoke to recent events in the world. And since we don't have a lot of news, I figured, hey, why not? So this is basically, they say in the intro here, here on Long Island, we've reached that part of summer when no one really wants to do anything. The days are long, the sun is hot, the campers have turned feral, and for the counselors, the back-to-school season can't come fast enough. To give you a taste of what daily life is like at CHB, here are some snippets of conversation we've overheard recently. And the first one is Will Salas. This one really made me laugh. I knew this article was going to be great right at the top. He says, guys, I'm serious. Entering Tartarus is not a good idea for a social media challenge. Please stop asking me how to get in. I'm not going to tell you. And for whoever has been saying, if Nico and Will can survive it, so can you. I have a message. You can't hide from me. I will find you. I don't know what I'm going to do after I find you. At the very least, I'll tell you that you're being irresponsible. He's so cute.
It's so very Will.
I love it. It's so funny.
If Nico and Will can survive it, so can you. You can't hide from me. I have a special set of skills.
Yeah. But also, like, that's so funny, is, like, you know, a social media challenge. Like, and later on, somebody says the hashtag Tartarus challenge, and I'm like, that is not...
No.
What kind of challenge you want.
We will not be doing this.
Yeah, not a good idea.
That is really funny.
And then Mr. D's was actually really funny, too. He says, wow, I've never seen a crop of demigods adjust so easily to their new life before. Back in the day, kids used to scream and cry after getting attacked by monsters and learning about the existence of the gods. These days, they just shrug and say, eh, not the weirdest thing I've experienced lately. I don't really know what's going on with the kids in the mortal world because I don't pay attention to current affairs, but hey, I'm not complaining. And it's so true.
Like, yeah.
Recently, there was, like, possible credible evidence that the government has, like, alien bodies in their possession, and literally everyone was like, okay, Like,
sure.
Let's just, why not move on. Like, what else could happen?
It's not the worst thing that's happened this week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even the most shocking thing that's happened this week. So, you know, bring it on.
Yeah. The one that really kind of hit me was Bob the Titan, because, of course, we know where he is now. And he says, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to be back, but is finding a decent place to live up here always this hard? Say what you will about Tartarus, at least I didn't have to worry about providing a credit check and security deposit, whatever those things are.
Can't we just find him a nice cave near near Camp Half-Blood that he can, like, make cozy? Because poor Bob does not need to be dealing with landlords. I couldn't think of the word landlord, so my brain went, make noises! Like, blah, 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 blah. But no, like, nobody needs to deal with landlords.
Yeah.
They're not fun.
Yeah. Just get them a nice cave. I like that idea. The last one I wanted to read out was Rachel Dare, because this one was a little bit interesting to me. And it says, the number of demigods who have deliberately ignored my prophecies in order to catch a double feature at the movies is frankly getting ridiculous. And no, just because I can see the future doesn't mean I know the best time to get up and go to the bathroom.
I mean,
it would be a useful skill.
Did you know that there is a website that will tell you?
I did know that.
Because it popped up again when I went to see Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people talking about it.
And I was like, oh, that's so funny. Like, I forget about it. But yes, if you are a person who knows that they're going to need to use the bathroom because it's a long movie, there is a website that will tell you, I forget exactly what it is, but it will tell you where the best parts in current movies are to take a break. Like, in Oppenheimer, there's certain points where it's like, okay, nothing, like, important is going to happen for the next 15 minutes. So, go, take your break, come back, and you'll be, you know, you'll be good to go. You won't miss much. And I freaking love that. Like, if there's a better use for technology and all of that, I've never heard it. Like, we really should be helping people. Like, okay, this is a down part. Like, this point in the Barbie movie, you can totally leave, you'll get the picture, you won't miss anything, and then you can get back. Because, yeah, it's too long to sit in the theater for 3 hours sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. What I found really interesting about Rachel's segment was that demigods can and do deliberately ignore her prophecies.
My only question is, like, are these, like, minor prophecies?
It could be.
Like, if she's giving, like, minor quests, like, maybe it's chores that have to get done around camp. I mean, I don't know. What does an oracle say if it's not a big prophecy?
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume there are minor prophecies. I don't think she would have prophecies for chores, although that would be hilarious, like, if she did.
Like, she just all of a sudden goes into prophecy oracle mode, and it's like, the cabins need to be swept out. Like, she just has this whole, like, rhyming stanza. It would be hilarious.
But we know that Nico ignored her prophecy, and so it kept coming back. But that was a big prophecy.
Right.
And also, I think, like, Hades had something to do with, like, that whole thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting. I'll be interested if that, like, comes up somewhere else down the line or something. I mean, this is current, and Chalice is in the past, so it doesn't have anything to do with Chalice, but, you know, maybe something else in the future. I don't know.
It wouldn't be the first time that Reed Riordan does something and we don't really know what's going on, and then, like, you know, a year later we find out that there's a new book and it's going here, and, you know,
that Nyx is totally the bad guy.
Totally. Called it.
Yeah. Oh, I was so excited.
Those were really fun, though. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoy all of that.
There were a couple other ones in there from campers that we, like, don't know quite as well and weren't as, like, interesting or relevant, so I didn't read them out, but if you enjoyed that, go read the rest of it, because it is pretty fun. That's it for the news this week. Hopefully there'll be more next week, but for now, let's go right into our discussion. We are talking about Rick Ren Presents Crossover Ideas. And this was inspired, like you said, by our City of the Plague God discussion and, to an extent, Fury of the Dragon Goddess as well by Sarwat Chadha. And the one that you actually inspired first off was Annabeth, Chela, and Belit, because the three of them together would kick total butt.
Minds are collectively blown.
Yeah, they're so powerful. They're so badass. I think that it would just be a lot of fun, especially because, like, They're all very similar in terms of being these, like, strong-willed women who are, like, warriors. I think Chayla and Bellet would be the most interesting pairing out of the three of those for me, just because I feel like Annabeth has gotten really good at, like, kind of being more of a mediator. Like, she's got a lot of experience now.
Yeah.
And so I think she kind of knows when to dial things back. And Bellet is so intense, and Chayla kind of doesn't put up with anything. Yeah. So the two of them would either clash a little bit, or they would become best friends.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like Annabeth would be the perfect glue to keep them from, like, completely going off the wall. Because if it was just Chayla and Bellet, I feel like they would just, like, they would go nuts. The world would hear about the adventures of Chayla and Bellet, because they would be everywhere causing chaos and putting chaos down at the same time. But, like, it would be nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my other favorite one was, we talked about the Arrow of Dodona, Jack, the Sword of Summer from Agnes Chase, and Kasusu from City of the Plague God and Dragon Goddess. And just the idea of these three weapons, who can speak and who kind of have these, like, strong personalities coming together, and whether they would, like, team up or they would hate each other, I really don't know. But I think that they would drive whoever they were with crazy. Like, and that would be so funny.
Could you imagine a one-shot where, like, all of the heroes have gotten together for some hero convention, let's say. Like, so all of the big heroes, they've all shown up at this place, and all of their weapons are, they have to drop their weapons off at, like, a weapons depot. So all three of these are just sitting there, and they're out bragging each other.
In the armory.
Right? They're talking about all their adventures with their hero, and they're like, oh, no, ours was definitely, you know, bigger than yours. Ours is more dangerous. What are you talking about? Like, we faced Tiamat. What are you trying to say? How do you possibly top that? And then you've got, like, the Arrow of Dodona being like, oh, well, you know what I've been up to. Like, I could so hear them just, like, going at it. It would be so funny.
It would be. I kind of like that, like, a bottle episode or something like that, where it's, you know, them just in the armory stuck together, just, like, this funny dialogue and stuff. I think you'd need, like, something else going on, like some other mystery they help solve or something like that. But just having them, like, sniping back and forth would be really funny.
Oh, yeah.
So, because we couldn't get this out of our heads, we were like, okay, there's got to be some other Rick Riordan Presents characters who would be really good together or really interesting to put together. Or just characters who are, like, similar enough where they might have the same objective they would want to solve. And so, the first place my mind went was Minnie from Arushaw, Paola from Paola Santiago, and Gabby from Sal and Gabby. I originally had Sal down here, but I think Gabby actually works a little bit better because all three of them are very science-based. Minnie is like the brainiac of the Arushaw group, and Paola, you know, she didn't ever really believe in her mother's, like, spirituality and stuff like that, and she liked science a lot. And Gabby is, you know, I don't remember Gabby's character too much, but I know she's, like, the president of their class or something like that, and she's kind of a bit, like, haughty and, you know it all.
Sure.
And so I think all of them are really, really smart, and all of them are very resourceful. And I was like, what could bring them together? Because you have, like, Hindu mythology with Minnie, you have Mexican folklore with Paola, and you have this, like, Cuban background with Sal and Gabby. And I was like, wouldn't it be interesting if it was some sort of, like, nature slash, like, tech monster, like something that really bridges the gap?
Because
Sal and Gabby, you know, deal with the multiverse, and Paola deals with these, like, Mexican folklore that's, like, you know, the weeping woman in the river and stuff like that. And then Minnie, you know, Hindu mythology is kind of all over the place. But because they're science-based, something, like, technological coming to life or something like that, I think could be really cool.
Some billionaire gets this technological answer to, like, global warming, to climate change, and comes up with this thing, and it ends up, like, waking some ancient magic. So you've got this ancient magic inhabiting this tech thing, and, like, that would be so cool.
That would be cool. And, like, especially if you could, you know, because all these stories take place in, like, the United States, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think most of the Rick Riordan Presents books do take place there. So that would be really cool, but, like, it could be global, you know? Oh, yeah. Like, if it had far-reaching consequences, that would cover at least, you know, two different parts of the world. I think that would be awesome.
And billionaires are always trying to solve stuff that they don't know how to solve.
And then making things
so worse. I could believe it.
Yeah.
Okay, so for my first one, this was my first thought. Like,
really?
After when we decided we were going to do this, and I was like, okay, I have to think of, like, all the characters. So I, like, started pulling up the different books to look and see. But there was this nagging feeling that I wanted to make, like, the ultimate older brothers club.
Aww.
And so June from Dragon Pearl and that whole universe.
Yeah.
As well as Mo from City of the Plague God. I feel like not only would they be the best older brothers club, and they would give each other, like, tips for helping your younger sibling save the world, and how to be a good brother and be supportive while your sibling is trying to stop terrible things from happening. They've also both been dead.
Yeah.
So they have that in common, too. Like, I feel like the conversations that they would have about what it feels like to be dead and being, like, finally someone else in the world, or at least in June, because June is still dead, at least in June's respect, like, they are able to be dead and also still be, you know, communicating with those that are alive. So I feel like Mo kind of being able to have conversations with them and be like, yeah, it's totally weird being dead, like, especially now that you're back alive, like, it's weird, you know, like, I feel like they could have some really fascinating conversations. Yeah. And again, would also be really fun to, like, watch them help their siblings save the world. So, like, if you had a story where Sick and Mean are, like, together fighting something, I would rather read Mo and June's, like, story. Like, I want to hear how they're helping. Like, I want it to come from their POV as they're watching all these crazy things happen. And I just feel like that would be lots of fun.
I love that so much. And I can't help but, and I know that this is not the same universe, obviously, but can we just throw Tadashi in there?
I know.
From Big Hero 6.
I know. He goes in the mix.
It would be so perfect.
He's not technically RRP, but he's Disney and it's, like, adjacent. So I am 100% fine with throwing Tadashi in too, because he would be perfect addition to that club.
Perfect. Yeah. I love that so much. That is such a good idea, because you're right. It's not even just that they're the older brothers. It's that they've been dead, and mm-hmm. so they kind of know what that is like, and they would bond, and then they would bond over helping their siblings. Oh, it's so great.
In general, I feel like they would get along well. But if you think about the things that they've done, like, Mo, I'm sure, would be fascinated to hear all that June has to talk about when it comes to, like, being a space cadet in space.
Yeah.
Which sounds wrong, because we've used that term to mean something else for a decade. No, but, like, I feel like he would love to hear all about space and what it means to, you know, be on other planets mm-hmm. and all of that.
Oh, and especially the biology on other planets.
Like, I'm sure he would be fascinated. Yeah. And June, I know, would be absolutely fascinated to hear about Tiamat and what Mo did to help defeat Tiamat and, like, what it meant for the world and, like, thinking about, like, you know, the reality of ancient beings coming back and putting the world into chaos. Like, yeah. I'm sure June would 100%, like, get on.
And also, they have dragons in this world. So, like, Tiamat being a big dragon, he would be like, oh, I have some dragon friends. And Mo's like, not like this.
Right? Like, different yeah. animal, let me tell you.
Oh, that actually works so well together. I love that so much. So my next one actually is kind of related to this, because I also thought of Mean, and I was like, there's got to be somebody I feel like who pairs really well with her. And I immediately thought of Riley, because both of them are based in Korean folklore and mythology. And I actually thought of this, like, a while ago, because at the end of The Last Fallen Realm, the Dragon Pearl is mentioned. And of course, we have an entire book dedicated to the Dragon Pearl, you know, it being lost and then found, and, like, what that all means and everything. And so I kind of imagine Riley hanging out as the sun for however long she's the sun, which is probably forever.
So 300 and something days a year, forever.
And so until enough time has passed that it's the future, because when Mean is alive, we have like space travel and something like that. So that's set way in the future. So Riley's been hanging out for hundreds and hundreds of years until Mean comes along, and then they team up for some space god realm related adventure.
Well, could you imagine, like, Mean is out and about in a spaceship doing, like, regular things, and, like, gets to this point where all of a sudden she can hear Riley's thoughts. Like, she's within a certain distance of Riley's star and is, like, all of a sudden she can hear things or something, and she's like, hello? Like, trying to figure out what's going on, and, like, Riley's like, can you hear me? Like, wait, hold on. And so, like, I could see that being, like, how they first, like, meet.
Yeah.
And then Riley gets a chance to be human for her 2 weeks or whatever, and her and Mean go on some adventure because something's gone wrong and something's breaking or whatever. I feel like that would be so much fun.
Yeah, I think it would be really great. And I love it because, for a couple different reasons, because magic, like, does exist in Mean's world, even though it's very much a sci-fi book. You know, you have, like, shapeshifters and, like, a lot of other kind of magics, but, like, Riley is, like, pretty much pure magic, although, in the end, they kind of blended magic and technology, too, so that's kind of very interesting.
Yeah.
And also with Mean being kind of like this trickster kind of personality, and Riley, well, I wouldn't really describe her necessarily as a trickster. She does kind of go against the wishes of, you know, her parents and other people and stuff like that. So I feel like they would both get into a little bit of trouble together, but like in the best possible way, in the way where they like save humanity or something.
Right, exactly. Like, or they screw something up, like, they break something that they're like, oh, we shouldn't have done that. And then they would 100% dedicate themselves to fixing it.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see that being, like, a thing. My second one also gets Mean involved again. I think it's just been so long since we read Dragon Pearl that, like, going back, I was like, oh, like, there's so many characters
here. There are,
That I come, you know, it's been a while since we've talked about them, because we talked about Dragon Pearl in January, like, that first year of the pod. So, like, we did it in, like, episode 15 or something. And here we are at episode 95. It's been a while. So, yeah, I was kind of obsessed with the idea of Mean and Paola as, like, partners. Because their worlds are so different. But they, I think, would absolutely be obsessed with the other's world.
Yeah.
Paola is space-obsessed, as we remember. Like, she, it has, you know, it's constantly studying the stars and that in a scientific way, whereas her grandmother is more into the magic side of things. I think Paola hearing about the science of Mean's life would be absolutely, like, gobsmacked by the idea of being in space all the time and working and being able to be a cadet in space and, like, all of that. I think she would absolutely love it. And then on the flip side, I think Mean would find Paola's dedication to science, like, really fascinating and, like, would love hearing about the magic side of her life and how she denied it for so long and, like, how, you know, eventually she would love to, you know, learn more about it. Like, getting into that whole side of things would be a totally new adventure for Mean, whereas, you know, Paola could probably use the help and could probably use someone, you know, to come help her do all the things. So I just feel like their personalities would mesh really, really well, not just because of Paola's interest in space, but, like, in general, the two of them, Mean can be a little trickstery, as you just kind of described her. But, like, Paola isn't necessarily out to cause trouble. She just knows what she wants. And, like, I feel like for some reason they would just work.
Uh-huh.
Just their personalities, I feel like, would click, as opposed to, like, I feel like if you tried to pair either of them with someone like Bellet or Chayla, things would go bad fast.
Yeah.
Like, they would just butt heads. Whereas I feel like these two would be very simpatico and just kind of get on the same page very quickly.
Because Chayla and Bellet are, like, very structured and dedicated to, like, their lifestyle. And I was actually thinking about this, too, because Mean and like Arusha, I don't know if they're like too similar.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't get along, or they would basically be twins and like do everything together. Because Arusha is like, she has trouble staying out of trouble, just like Mean does.
Yeah.
And she means well, both of them mean well, but it just tends to happen a lot. So I think they're very similar in that sense.
Can I tell you, there was also, I so wanted to include a character from Winston Chu in one of these, but for some reason my brain like would not compute the other characters. Like, I could remember Winston and I could remember like specific scenes, but for some reason was having a lot of trouble wrapping my head around all of his friends. Like, I was like, I remember the friend group, but I don't remember everybody's individual like traits very well. And rather than spending like an hour going down the rabbit hole, I was like, I will just declare my love for Winston Chu, because I remember parts of that story so vividly that I was just like, I don't know if I have anyone to fill in that gap, but I still love that story so much.
I really wanted to do like a monster sidekick team.
Ooh,
up.
That would be fun.
But I was having trouble like coming up with them, and it was really bothering me because I was also like, I feel like Rabasu and would team up with some other creatures and that would be really interesting. Like, what about, oh my god, Rabasu and Blackjack? She'd be like, this is the biggest pigeon I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh.
Would she try to eat him?
Like, maybe. I think she'd be intimidated.
Maybe
I don't think
bit.
She could actually eat him. Like, she would immediately, that would be her first thought.
Yeah.
But then I feel like she would get used to the idea that, like, it's something to ride, not something to eat.
Yeah.
And that's a new thing. I will say, when I first sat down to do this, I wanted desperately to find something to pair with the troglodytes.
Oh.
I was like, I want a book where the troglodytes take front center stage, but I want someone who like will work seamlessly with them. And the only thing I could come up with at all were the dog creatures from Last Fallen Realm, the Last Fallen books.
Oh my god.
Like the underworld.
Yeah, but also Paula's Bruno.
Oh, Bruno. Oh, see? Bruno. I forgot.
Like the hellhounds, basically. We could have paired all the hellhounds together.
Right?
Cerberus, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much good stuff here. There's so much. I'm overwhelmed by the possibilities. There's just so many options.
As soon as you said the troglodytes, I was like, Hearthstone and Blitzen from Magnus Chase, because they've got this whole, like, with the hats and the clothes and stuff, I feel like that would be
really, that would be really fun.
Yeah.
If, like, Hearthstone and Blitzen found their way into the underworld for some reason, and, like, that would be fun.
Something about Hearth never taking off the scarf that Blitz gave him early in their friendship. Like, something about that just reminded me of, like, it'd be a good pairing with the troglodytes.
I 100% think so. Yeah.
That would be so cute.
I would read it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, back on track.
Yeah, so the last big pairing that I chose, I was actually really excited to dive into this because I think it works so perfectly. And I've actually brought this up before. It would be Sick and Samira from the Magnus Chase books, because they're both Muslim and both of their families are from Iraq, which I don't think I realized that it was specifically like the same country. And I was like, oh my god, that works so perfectly. But the other reason why it works so well is because both Samira's character in Magnus Chase and pretty much City of the Plague Gods and Fury of the Dragon Goddess deal with the fact that somebody can still be religious, like to still believe in their own god, and yet these other gods exist. And it was discussed a lot in both Plague God and Dragon Goddess that, like, Sick's mother sees these other characters as, like, djinn or, like, superheroes, not necessarily gods that rival their one god. And Samira feels the same way. She's still very religious. She still believes in her god, but she recognizes that somebody like Loki, who is her father, exists. And to me, that is just, like, fascinating.
Yeah.
And I really love that. And I really want to see Sick's reaction to the Norse gods.
I mean,
wouldn't that be hilarious? He's like, okay. Look, this other stuff was enough. You mean there's whole other pantheons out there?
Like, because I could see the wheels start turning. Because, like, again, it's one thing to learn that the Mesopotamian gods, like, existed. To learn that the Norse gods exist, I could see him going, so are you saying the Greek gods are real,
yeah,
too?
Yeah. Like, and Rabasu was like, I told you!
Right? I've been telling you all along! Who was right? Who was right, Sick?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, I could totally. Oh my gosh, it would be so much fun.
Ugh. Yeah, and I thought, okay, so what if, like, a Mesopotamian god teamed up with a Norse god? And so these two were, like, literally the only ones that could really defeat them because they're, like, experts in their own field and
yep.
they come together. That would be so interesting.
Yeah, somehow something gets messed up where all of the different pantheons, like, are talking to each other.
Yeah.
Like, not that they're, it's not like a Greek-Roman thing where they're the same being, but, like, for some reason, the worlds are clashing and they're able to talk, mm-hmm. and so they team
we
up.
We actually saw that in, I think it's, Chiron mentions at some point that he goes and meets, I think it's Bast, and the one god who's, like, just ahead from the Norse mythology. I forget his name, but, like, Chiron definitely talks about, like, crossing that line.
I think I remember that now, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
That would
and
be so fun.
My favorite thing about this pairing is Belit's reaction, which could be really funny, especially if she and Samira become, like, best friends and are just relentlessly picking on Sick.
I mean, I could see it.
It would be so funny.
I could 100% seeing this work as
yeah.
a dynamic. Like, yes. Okay, so my last one isn't really, like, a pairing.
No, but I got so excited when I read this.
So, my last one is Sally Jackson
mm-hmm.
and all the other parents.
Yes.
Because, okay, as parents of children who are either demigods or children of other gods or have some sort of lineage that has made them other and, you know, a
yeah.
hyper-real version of themselves, it's got to be really hard to be their parents.
Yes.
I mean, whether or not you're really supportive, like Sick's parents, or whether, you know, you're parents who don't really understand what's going on, or whatever, there are so many parents in these books that I feel like they kind of get a backseat because they're not the central part of the story. The child is the center of the story, and their parents are more just obstacles or a help in some instances where they when they need help. But having them all get together for, like, a group therapy, like, support
yeah.
group setting where Sally is, like, leading it because she's successfully helped Percy, like, through some of this stuff and she's been supportive and she kind of understands what it's like to be that parent. And so I could see, you know, parents who are brand new to this whole idea, you know, their children have just come out, like, their powers have just been born to them or whatever, and they're like, okay, the first place you need to go to make to do this right and not screw it up is to the parent support group, and Sally is an amazing human being and she will help you, I promise. And, like, they get there and Sally's like, it's 100% fine to be overwhelmed. That is going to happen. No one thinks their child is going to have the ability to control water, and then my child arrives on the scene. Like, I didn't think I was going to get chased by a minotaur, but I did. And then I went to the underworld for a while, and it was really weird. But after I got back, I was saved by my child, and all that. Like, I could just hear.
Yeah.
Like, all of the stories of these parents, like, trying to figure out how to help their kids, and they don't know how, and Sally's just like, these are the best ways. Here's some tools to help you deal with it. And, like, it would just be amazing.
I love the idea that Sally's in charge, because she definitely would be. I feel like she's got so much experience, and she's been doing this for such a long time. But also, I keep thinking about her and Aru's mom being, like, really close, because Aru and Percy are very similar in that, like,
yeah.
they don't mean to get in trouble, but they kind of do anyway, and, like, they've got a lot going on. They're a little bit brash, and, like, her mom, you know, understands who Aru is and kind of has to support her because you don't really have a choice in that position. And Sally's been doing that for so long. This was such a good idea. I'm really glad that you put this down.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, I feel like so many of these parents either just don't have all the tools. Like, they just don't know how. And, like, Sally didn't know how. She had no idea what was going on, but she figured it out, and I could just see her being the type of person who would want to share all of her knowledge and share all of her, you know, hard-earned wisdom with all of these parents.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. So we did already come up with a few random ones that we thought were really good, but I also asked people on Twitter if they had any parents they thought were really interesting, and we got two really amazing answers. The first is from Rachel at RachelJoy23, who says, from Aro Shah, I'd really like to see Brynn and Alex Fierro from Magnus Chase. I just feel like they would vibe with each other for some reason. I totally agree. I think that they would be really great together. And she also said, Minnie and Nico, very different death-associated characters. That could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Nico is a super nerd, so I feel like they would really geek out. Oh, he would introduce her to mythomagic. She would love that.
Yeah.
I really, oh, that's so great.
That, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, those are really good. And Just a Media Guy at A Media Guy 19 came through with some serious pairings.
Yeah.
And said that at Spidey Piper helped me out with some of them. So that's really great. So we're going to go through these. So first one is Meg from Trials of Apollo, Aro Shah, Sadie Kane, and Alex Fierro. The sheer amount of chaos would be nuts. Totally agree with that.
Yes.
I mean, Meg and Alex in particular, well, I feel like.
My brain is putting Meg and Sadie in the same room and going, yeah. Oh gosh, like that's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
And we're only halfway through Red Pyramid. I don't even know what Sadie's capable of yet, but I'm already like, okay, yeah, that.
Meg is chaos on her own, so putting her with any of these other ones, definitely.
Let alone all of them. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Next one is Sarwa and Jason. Both grew up learning how to fight from a young age. Trauma bond. I would also put Bella in there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And Chayla, really.
I liked this one. Yeah.
That one's really good. Zane Obispo, Aro Shah, and Jason Grace, lightning siblings bonding. I think that's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Chayla Hidalgo and Zia Rashid, badass bonding, blurred lines between mortal and immortal. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I think they would also very much get along. We could probably throw Zia in there with Chayla, Bella, and Annabeth.
Just all sure. The ladies.
Yeah.
Just get them all. Yeah, I think that would be cool.
Magnus, Mateo, and Will Solace, Healers United. That one's really good. I like that one a lot. Mateo and Will is a really good pairing.
That's what I was just, like, with Mateo's music and Will.
Yeah. Because he's music, too.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Like, I feel like their personalities would get along so well,
they
too.
They would.
Like, they just...
They would really understand each other. And I think Will would find Mateo's way of healing very interesting.
Yes.
Very, very interesting.
Absolutely. I could see Will getting a little jealous that, like...
Yeah.
That's not his straight up power. Like, how is that not the way I do this? Like, come on.
And especially being able to, like, weaponize that, I feel like Will would be very intrigued by that.
So very much.
Yeah. That's a good one. Then we have Renata, Minnie, and Lester. Renata and Minnie ask Lester a million questions about being a god. That is pretty funny. Minnie would be kind of obsessed.
Absolutely.
Gabby Royale and Annabeth, they would bond over building small houses in Gabby's backyard.
Aww. I mean...
That's so cute.
I could definitely... Because Gabby's younger, right? I haven't read Sal and Gabby. Wow. I just mushed those together a million ways. I haven't read that book. Gabby's younger?
I think a little bit, like...
Because, like, if Annabeth is, like, 17 and Gabby's, like, 12...
Or 13,
I could see Annabeth taking on, like, a younger sister, like, and a younger sister who, like, would have fun building things. Oh my gosh. Like, I'm kind of obsessed with the idea because Annabeth would 100% eat that up.
Yeah.
And would, like, I could see her, like, taking on that advisor role and, like... Like, I can help you with all these things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you need help with anything, come to me because I'm here. I'm totally here.
You know what's really interesting? This is a little bit of an aside. Every time we say Annabeth, I picture Leah. She's really become my Annabeth. And that is just incredible to me.
This is where things get weird for my brain. As a person who doesn't really see things when I close my eyes, this is one of those things. I forget there's an actual name for it. But, like, when I close my eyes, I don't actually see pictures. I just see black. And then I, in the back of my mind, like, where I dream, I can kind of force myself to envision what a dream would look like. So I can picture it, but it's, like, not here. It's, like, way back here.
Okay.
That I'm forcing my brain to, like, picture something.
That makes no sense to me, but that's fine.
It's a weird-ass place in here, I'm telling you. But because I, like, have that I don't initially envision any person, usually, until I see a movie.
Okay.
Once I, like, get to watch Leah as Annabeth, that will be... She will probably be the only Annabeth I picture from
now. Because that's so visual, it, like, takes over.
Like, that visual becomes the visual I have, and so then my brain will, like, remember that. It's just one of those things for me. So, while I don't yet picture her, I'm very excited. Because I know that very, very soon that's probably going to be the Annabeth in my head all the time, and I'm very excited for that.
The next pairing is Sal and Leo Valdez. Sal shows Leo magic tricks, and Leo makes more magic stuff for him.
Okay, one of the other things when we started doing this was I kept thinking of Leo, and I was like, I want to, like, find the perfect buddy for Leo.
Yeah.
Like, somebody who is just 100% into his stuff, and I was not, like, that wasn't the direction my brain went. I started thinking about science and space, and I was like, oh, so many other good options. So I didn't end up coming back around to Leo. But I love this.
Yeah, I think
it'd be a lot of fun.
I'm also kind of interested in Leo and Meg together, because I feel like, I don't know how well they would get along, but I think Leo would, like, kind of accept her at face value, because Meg can be a little bit, like, I kind of view her, I don't know if the fandom has discussed this before, but I feel like she's a little, like, autistic-coded, and so I kind of wonder, like, Leo would just take her at face value, and just, like, I think he could roll with that really easily, and they're both chaos, so I think that they would work really well together.
I can actually see that, like, working very well.
Yeah.
Like, rather than trying to change Meg or, like, you know,
tone her down.
Or fit her in a box.
Yeah.
Leo would just, like, build her a bigger box.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, well, you can totally fit in with me.
Yeah.
Like, I could 100% see that working.
And the last pairing is Sikander and Nico D'Angelo saying, I feel like they would have a super interesting dynamic. I think that's really good because I think Sikander is such a compassionate and soft character. We talked about that a lot before. And I think Nico does have, like, a lot of rage inside him, but these days he's also a lot softer. And he views, you know, this is really good because Sik and Nico both view the world in a way that other people don't, where, like, Sik kind of sees, like, where Lugal was coming from and found a way to defeat him that was, like, left of center. And Nico is very empathetic toward the dead and for all the things that people have gone through. I think that they would, like, vibe.
Yeah.
Like, they would be on the same page without really having to say too much about it.
And since Sik has been to the city, you know, Mesopotamian god version of the underworld, I feel like them kind of having conversations about what it meant to be there and, like, what it meant to them, how their experiences with it. Like, I would love to see them just, like, even if it's just have a conversation.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I feel like they have a lot in common and a lot of things that would allow them to, like, think broadly about the dead and the underworld and all of that.
For that matter, throw Riley in there, considering the time she spent down there, too.
Or Hattie.
Yeah.
Like,
ooh, Hattie's a good one.
Like, put Hattie in that scenario, too.
Because she's got a lot of compassion, too.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I got goosebumps. That is good.
So many good pairings, so thank you.
Yeah, both of those answers, well, all of Justin Media Guy's answers and Rachel's answers were so, so good. I love doing these little, like, mind exercises because it makes you think about things in such a different way than we're used to. And we know that basically the multiverse does exist in the Rick Riordan universe. So this is not out of the question.
And like, do we think there's going to be 17 crossover books written next year? No. But there is, you know, there's always a possibility that something could work out. Like, if they decided to do another Cursed Carnival, but they did it where characters visit visit each other or something. Yeah. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm. And it would be so interesting to get, like, two authors working together to do something like that, even if it was just, like... I was even thinking, like, the Annabeth Bellett Chayla story... That should be, like, a charity thing or something. Like, the three of them write it together and then, like, auction it off or something like that. That would be amazing.
Agreed.
Yeah. But if you guys have any more ideas, please send them to us because this was so interesting and I want to keep talking about this. And we can do that if you guys send us in feedback. Then we can keep discussing it. But until then, now it's time to get back to the Kane Chronicles.
Yeah, and hopefully have more characters to add to our future. Because I'm sure as we read more and more RRP books, we can definitely try this again and, like, expand it even more to, as more are written, as we read more of the ones that exist that I haven't read yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could definitely try it again.
For sure.
But yeah, I'm very interested to see who Carter and Sadie are by the end of this book, because they've already come pretty far, and there's a lot of space and story left to read. So we are talking about The Red Pyramid, Chapter 18, entitled When Fruit Bats Go Bad. Our recap, Carter and Sadie escape to Paris with Bast's help and learn a few more things about themselves in the process. And then it's off to steal things from Desjardins, because of course it is.
Yeah. This is the chapter we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
This is the chapter that finally gives us answers.
Yeah, we got some very good, solid answers to work with from here, as well as learn some pretty interesting things about... not only Set, but also the human he may be embodying. But we'll get there. Let's just step right into this. So, it's a rainy day in Paris when they pop out of the obelisk, and Bast...
That's a sentence I never thought I would hear.
Bast has... she heals Carter's rib with a touch of her hand and some spoken Egyptian, and Paris, we learn very quickly, is Desjardins' headquarters. It's the 14th gnome. And so it's the last place anyone would think to look for Carter and Sadie, because why would they hide in a city where Desjardins knows like the back of his hand?
Now, did Zia tell them to go there, or did that happen on accident?
I think the plan was she said Paris because of the obelisk.
Okay.
Like, because they were going to be traveling via obelisk, not via the Duat or anything, like.
Oh.
And so they could only go to where the other obelisks were.
And Carter knew that it was in Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that was...
So this was really just a lucky break.
I think so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so they end up in Paris, and we know that their amulets are designed to keep them hidden, not necessarily from Bast, because Bast has been promised to... take care of Sadie forever and ever and always.
Right.
So Bast can always find her, but all the other house-related things won't be able to track them down that way. So they're actually kind of safe there because no one will look for them there. It's that... what is the... The closer we are to danger, the farther we are from harm.
Oh.
It's from a movie.
Okay.
I'll have to look it up because it's a line from a movie and it's a character kind of trying to rationalize why being super close to the danger is, like, the safest place to be. And it's the same thing here. Anyway, moving forward. So, Bast is surprised that Carter and Sadie lasted more than a few minutes in the first gnome. And as she's kind of talking to them about how the first gnome has always been, like, quick to blow new godlings up, she uses the word godlings to describe them, and Carter and Sadie both go, whoa. Pause for a minute. What was that word? And so Bast is forced to kind of explain to them what's going on.
Yeah. By the way, it's from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, yes. Thank you. yes. It's Pippin.
I
describing it to Dom. Or Pippin is describing it to, I say Dom, but that's Dom Monaghan who plays Merry. Yeah. So genius. Anyway, back to the book. So yeah, Bast refers to them as godlings, and that just kind of takes them both, you know, they've just learned via from Zia that, like, they're hosting gods, or they could be hosting gods, and so that whole concept is a lot. And so they get into the actual discussion of what happened in the museum. When the Rosetta Stone was shattered, 5 gods were released. They already knew that. And learning that Osiris bonded with their dad, they kind of had a feel that that's what happened. But they didn't think that all of the other 4 gods immediately bonded to someone close, or someone at least within a certain distance from the stone. So the idea that is that Set got away somehow, we'll get back to that. Sadie also infers that 2 of the released gods probably joined to them. So then they're trying to kind of like ration out what gods could have bonded with them, since they were in the room where they weren't supposed to be. Their dad had told them to stay out of the room and that the amulets would protect them. They were in the room, so the amulets couldn't fully do their job. The 2 gods that more than likely, and we learn this is true, at least in Carter's respect, since this is his chapter, Sadie is wearing an amulet with a tiet, which is like a magical knot on it, which is the symbol of Isis. So we are meant to believe, and I think it's a fair assumption, that Sadie is hosting Isis. And Carter is wearing an amulet with the Eye of Horus on it, and it seems like a pretty good assumption that it's Horus, because when Carter, like, kind of just speaks into his head and says, like, hey, you, Horus goes, yeah, it's me. So it's like, you know, Horus answers back.
Yeah, that is really funny.
And I loved how Bast reacted to that, too, because he goes, like, oh, yeah, he's talking to me now. And she goes, you're already talking to him? That's so great. Like, that's awesome. Good work, you know. And I can just, you know, imagine the insanity. Like, I'm talking to an Egyptian god who's in my head, and this isn't weird at all, and she's encouraging it and telling me that I'm doing a great job.
Yeah, this, like, other god is right. Encouraging it. Now, this is only 4 gods, though.
Right.
Do we know the 5th one?
I don't think they ever talk about who the 5th one is. They're just kind of assuming that there is a 5th god who bonded to someone.
Right.
As they came out.
Wonder if that was, like, Anubis? That's the only other one that I could, like, think of off the top of my head. I mean, obviously there are other ones, but that's another big one.
Someone knows, because, like, when we talk about the 5 gods, they came as, like, a set.
Yeah.
So, like, someone actually, not a set, someone actually knows who those 5 were. So it's just not us, apparently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Anubis makes sense. My brain wanted to fill in, like, Thoth, but I think Thoth would kind of, he wouldn't necessarily be clumped in with the other 4.
Yeah, I feel like Anubis would be closer to that.
Yeah.
But that's a good question. Hopefully that comes up soon.
Yeah, as of right now, we don't have an answer to that, but we did get lots of other answers.
Yes, we did.
So upon learning this, Sadie is, like, kind of freaked out, as you would be, and she decides to try and destroy the amulet, because that's how Isis got into her. If I destroy it, obviously she'll leave. Like, that makes sense. So she tries to destroy it, and all it does is set her wand to smoking and scorch her hand, like, black, which Bast heals very quickly. And, yeah, she basically says, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that again. I wouldn't try it again. I wouldn't have tried it the first time. You know, not a great idea. Carter then starts kind of wondering why he's not more powerful. He has a god inside him. Like, how is that not unlimited power? Like, makes me think of Jafar as the genie. Like, why all of a sudden am I not the all-powerful being? And Bast basically just reminds him, like, you have to learn how to use that power. You know, Horus is inside of you, but it doesn't mean that you have access to that power yet. You don't even know how to use your own power, let alone Horus's yet. So until you have a better understanding of that, you're not really going to be able to tap into, you know, mega power. Or the other option to learning how to run the ship himself is to just let Horus run the show, which is totally available to him. And Horus is like, yeah, that's a really great idea. We should totally do this. You should let me have control. And Carter's like, no.
Yeah.
Which does not surprise me. Of the 2, I would say Sadie would probably be the one who would be like, all right, Isis, like, take the reins for a bit. See what happens. Well, I want power back. You're not staying forever, but you can take the reins for a minute. Yeah. Like, I could see Sadie being up to test that theory, whereas Carter 100% would never want to give up that amount of control.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Carter tells Sadie, because he, in the explanation of this, he kind of mentions his dream from the night before, and so he tells her about how seeing Amos captured by Set, and what, you know, how that is really bad news, and all of that. It just kind of gets lumped into this discussion, which leads to Bast basically being like, it leads to the whole group discussing whether or not Desjardins is hosting SET, which was a bit of a mind blower for me because I did not anticipate that at all.
Yeah.
Desjardins seems like enough of a pain in the butt all on his own to be a problem for them. It never occurred to me that he would have been close enough, like, geographically for SET to choose him. But I don't think there's a better person in the story yet for SET to have chosen to host him if he's looking for someone who's going to help him, like, take down these powerful children, this family, like, yeah.
Again, I do not know anything else about this book. I feel very strongly that this is a red herring.
Mm.
And I feel very strongly that it's Amos. Because Amos is Julius's brother and Set is Osiris's brother.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So then, I mean, is Desjardins just a jerk? Which is very possible. Don't think he needs more motivation. Could he be hosting Anubis or a different god? But then again, he's tracking them down because they're godlings. So, like, I don't think he would be hosting anybody.
But can you, I mean, obviously you can host without knowing.
Yeah.
Like, and I could even see Set being powerful enough to, like, take over without Desjardins really understanding what's happening.
But the thing is, too, Julius, Amos, Sadie, and Carter all have Pharaoh blood in them. Desjardins, we learn later, is a newer family and isn't necessarily, like, wrapped up in all of that. So, like, he might not be able to host them, period.
Yeah, it's, that's an interesting
thought. I think it's a red herring.
I mean, I could believe either way. If Desjardins, it really is the one hosting, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I never saw it coming. But I also agree with you that maybe it's just, a red herring. It's just meant to distract us from all the other crazy things that are about to happen.
But we know too much about Egyptian mythology now to be tricked.
It's true. We're doing the research.
Yeah.
We hear again about how Carter and Sadie's ancient bloodlines and the fact that they, both of their parents come from ancient bloodlines, gives them a rare amount of power on their own, let alone them each hosting two very powerful gods.
Yeah.
There's an insane amount of power there. They just do not know how to tap into it yet. And this is the moment where Bast lets slip that their mom was trying to survive without the power of a god. So we get the whole story, finally, of what happened at the obelisk and how their mom died. So Carter and Sadie insist on hearing it, and Bast tells it. Julius and their mom released Bast from Cleopatra's needle. There was too much power from that action, and Julius would have died. But their mom threw up a shield to protect him, and in that second, in that split second, Bast offered to merge spirits with their mom to protect her and also protect their father so they would survive. They would both survive. But their mom refused. She instead tapped into her own magic reservoir and tapped herself out, sacrificing herself when she drained it and burned up.
Mm-hmm. How tragic is that?
Yeah.
That's so sad. I mean, I love that, like, she was trying to protect Julius and all that kind of stuff. And if you remember, like, the magicians aren't supposed to meld with the gods. So, like, she was trying to do what she had learned was the right thing and not, like, get too close to the gods. But that was a fatal mistake on her part.
Right. And I think she knew that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she was making the logical, like, she was sacrificing herself to save Julius, knowing that it was probably going to tap her out. I don't think she expected to survive it, which breaks my heart, but, you know, I think she thought this was the best way to go, and I do think she should have just joined with Bast, because Bast is pretty cool and seems pretty chill. I don't know, but who knows what chaos would have been born from that.
Yeah.
Carter, at that second, reaches into his head and asks Horus if it would be possible to bring their mother back, and we get silence. Where Horus seems pretty quick to answer before, has nothing to say to this. So it makes me feel like it's possible, but probably not suggested.
It's not a good idea.
Yeah. Like, it's because of the amount of power at their fingertips, I'm guessing there is definitely a chance that they could do it, but they probably shouldn't be. So we're definitely going to come back to that at some point, I can almost promise you. If there's a bad idea to be had in a Rick Riordan book, it's definitely going to come
back.
They're
going to try it at least once.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of have to. It's just how it works. But we'll get to that eventually when it pops back up in the story. Bast, then we get to the actual, like, action plot of this chapter. In order to defeat Set, they need to steal a rare spell book that was written by Thoth that describes details how to kill Set. It is a prized possession of a magician that she happens to know, and it's nearby. In fact, it's at Desjardins' house. So let's go break in!
Because of course it is.
Right? Like, let's break in. It's not a big deal. We can totally handle this. In fact, I'm going to let you two handle it, because I'm a god and I can't break the threshold anyway, so it's going to be fine. You guys can handle this. So we pretty much flip at that point to them breaking into Desjardins' house, which is on Pyramids Road. Makes me giggle. I think it's hilarious. Carter points out that the front door of Desjardins' house is red, which is the color of Set, also the color of chaos and destruction. And then we got an explanation of what black and red mean in the Egyptian.
I loved this so much because black is the color of, like,
Soil.
Yeah. And red is the color of sand in the desert, so it makes sense that those colors would come to mean those things. And of course, in the Western world, black is usually seen as a bad thing. In Chinese culture, red is like the lucky color.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so many... I love this kind of stuff and the different cultures and, like, how they each, you know, decide what these things symbolize. But that explanation in particular, I found really fascinating.
It's so simple. And
yeah,
yet absolutely effective and brilliant. Like, why would you see as anything other than that? Good soil is everything to the people of Egypt because there's so much sand.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can easily see how red began, you know, came to mean chaos and destruction, whereas black is like a good, pleasant, wonderful color and, you know, brings with it sustenance and all of those things.
If anyone ever complains that I wear too much black, I'm in head-to-toe black today, then I'm just going to tell them this explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Bast suggests that Carter and Sadie turn into birds and fly to the roof garden and then into the house, because that's what you do when you're hosting a god.
Yeah.
They all have a bird form. Congratulations, you can now fly. Like, I love the simplistic explanation Bast gives them. Like, all you have to do is simply imagine yourselves as birds, and you will be a bird.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks! You knew we've been able to do this the whole time? We could have just flown around instead of trying to jump through the duat all these times and, like, failing? Like, we could have escaped the scorpion lady by just becoming birds? Like... there's a lot that the secrets need to stop.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a lot that they could do to help themselves that they don't know about yet.
Although I do feel like this is something you kind of have to ease yourself into. Like, being able to turn into a bird and fly is kind of a big deal.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. And we see that Carter turns into a falcon, which is kind of... it's expected because one of Horus's animals is a falcon, so, like, that's not shocking. But Sadie turns into a gray kite. No, not the triangle diamond-shaped thing that you fly in the sky that's made of paper. It's an actual bird called a kite. And they take off. And suddenly they're flying over Desjardins' house. And Horus is giving Carter tips, like, as they're flying, which I kind of love. Now that they've acknowledged their godly
presence.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, it's almost like a, not like a dragon rider, but, like, it's like a passenger. That's the word I was looking for. Like, they're not possessed by this god. It's like the god is a passenger in their body. They're there as well.
Right.
So, yeah. So, like, Carter and Horus are kind of working together here. And Horus tells him, like, you know, there's a magic border on the house, you'll be able to fly through it. Just here's how you do it, you know, whatever. So they get through this magic border that kind of looks like a double door, and they land safely in the middle of a library. Carter doesn't have to do more than think about being back in human form, and poof, he's a human. However, Sadie is stuck as a kite and can't seem to figure out how to get back to human, which I was very worried about. I kind of freaked out for her. The idea of, like, being stuck in a new form that you've been told is really easy, it's simple, and then, like, not being able to get out of it. My guess is that something going on in this house or in that magic border affected Sadie because of who she is, because of Isis, because of, like, I think it affected differently than Horus. That's my guess. But for some reason, Sadie is stuck as a kite. So Sadie is on lookout duty, whereas Carter is looking for the book they're looking for. And Carter is thinking of all the Shabti that they used back at the house when they were in the house, the Amos's house. And he's like, man, I really wish we could just, like, summon the Shabti. And that reminds him that he has that little wax doll in his bag that he can use as a Shabti to help him find it. So he animates it and says, help me find this book that I'm looking for. And the first book that the wax doll finds is The Book of Summoning Fruit Bats, which is not the book we're looking for. Yeah.
Also, Doughboy was really not that helpful. No. Like, they got what they needed in the end, but he kept stopping on all these different things. And I was like, what are you doing? I thought you had one objective.
Right. And Carter was definitely frustrated. Like, yeah. Why are you going? No, like, that's not the book. Come on. Like, this is what we're focused on something else. What are you doing? We quickly find out that Desjardins is 200 years old, which is very young for a magician. And that it's in the book that they're looking for. We find out that Desjardins is 200 years old. And so that kind of informs a lot about Desjardins as a magician and what he... It definitely makes Karen's theory about Amos that much more plausible because the ancient magic and the pharaoh lines are what help a person to, like, channel a god and actually house a god.
Right.
And so it definitely... I didn't think of that, but it makes me think twice about just believing that this is exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. So they hear loud noises downstairs, which urges Carter to get Doughboy to hurry up. And I just found it really fascinating that as they pull the book out of the shelf, everything starts to shake.
Yeah.
Like, I was curious if this was just an escalation of whatever's going on downstairs that we don't know about yet, or is it, like, the power of this book written by Thoth and has the power... It has all the detailed instructions on how to kill Set. Like, is something about this book making the house shake?
I just assumed that Desjardins booby-trapped the book.
Because that didn't even occur to me.
Because it's, I mean, if it can kill Set, or if it's, like, that powerful. I mean, this is Thoth, the god of wisdom, who wrote this book. There's probably some very important, powerful information in there. Desjardins isn't going to want other people to get that information, so I assumed he just booby-trapped the book with all those fruit bats.
Which makes so much... Well, I mean, the fruit bats were one thing, but I thought there was something else kind of going on. And even if it was just like a... Like, the shaking is to remind Desjardins that this is what's going on upstairs. Like, it's an alarm bell kind of thing, whereas the fruit bats are there to stop the person. Like, yeah. That makes total sense. So Sadie takes to the air and collides with something small and black that she swallows, and we quickly learn that it's fruit bats,
yeah.
And that there are a whole lot of them descending upon our heroes. So Carter takes to bird form, and they both get out of there. Carter then leads the fruit bats on a merry chase and eventually escapes and turns back into human and is talking to Bast and Sadie, who is now human, on the ground. This is, this is why I think something in the magical border or something in Desjardins' house was specifically stopping Isis from, like, physically taking form or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like she had trouble once she got out of the house. She was able to change back really quickly, yeah. So just one of those things. But they obviously need to take cover because these fruit bats are still incoming, despite the fact that Carter, you know, distracted them for a while. And so Bast recommends the Louvre, and they take off running as someone bursts out of Desjardins' house, and they don't even take a moment to see who it is. They just keep running. Yeah. So they are off to the Louvre, and that is where we end this chapter. Lots of action, lots of info, lots of stuff going on.
This was a big chapter.
It was.
Yeah. I'm glad we finally got some answers and that it's going to lead somewhere towards, like, they're on their way to Set at this point, you know? So that's really interesting.
They're looking for a way to defeat him. They're working toward finding Set. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I am really looking forward to getting a Sadie chapter because I'm interested to see what is going on between her and Isis.
Yeah.
That's going, like, we know what's going on between Carter and Horus now. We can kind of hear literally Horus's voice in Carter's head. I want to know if Isis is kind of doing the same thing, or is it like more like ethereal? Does Sadie, has Sadie been hearing this and thinking it was just like, you know, another voice in her head? Or, you know, I'm very intrigued as to how that all is working right now. But before we're done with the chapter, we have to do our favorite quotes and our favorite moments. My favorite quote was kind of toward the beginning of the chapter. It was between Bast and Carter. And Bast says, "Really, Carter, you should learn to fall like a cat." And Carter goes, "I'll work on that." And it just, there's just a visual of Carter, like, learning to land on his feet that made me giggle, and I couldn't help it. There were a lot of good one-liners in this book, in this chapter, though.
There really were. I had a lot of trouble picking.
Like, I thought about, I put this down, like, right away, and I was like, if something better comes up that I like, I'll pick something else. But, like, I liked them all, so I was like, I'm just gonna leave it because I can't pick another one. Like, it's already done. I don't want to think of another one. But what was yours?
Mine was, "Pyramids Road," Sadie said. "Obvious much. Maybe he couldn't find a place on Stupid Evil Magician Street," I suggested.
I did love that.
That one was really funny.
I mean, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
And then our favorite moments, for me, it was Bast letting slip that their mother refused her power and that's why she died. It just, it was a moment that we could have probably waited 5 more chapters to learn, but I'm really glad that it just kind of slipped out and that Bast immediately gave them the story and now they know what's going on there, and it kind of informs them as to, you know, better as to what's going on with their situation now. So I'm just really glad that we're starting to get some answers and fill in some pieces and things. What was yours?
By the way, I just have to say that you've been picking such tragic moments lately.
I know.
You did this last week, too.
I know. I like it. I like it sad. No, there are so many good, funny things, but, like, that's just so important and poignant that I can't, I can't ignore it.
My favorite moment was Carter and Sadie turning into birds, which in and of itself would have been fascinating. I love that Carter didn't know how to fly at first and ran into the fence, and then Sadie's just sitting there, like, laughing at him, and then up in the room, she can't turn back, so she keeps pecking at him angrily. That was really funny to me.
Oh, yeah.
But also Bast doing everything within her power not to eat them. She wanted to eat them so badly.
Karen, Bast and Rabisu. Did we already talk about them?
We didn't. Oh, I like that.
Like, they would just go pigeon hunting together.
Yes, they would. That's so cute.
They would have so much fun.
I love that.
And, like, Bast could be in cat form half the time, and, like, Rabisu would just have a pet cat, which is hilarious
to
me.
That would be funny.
Just, yeah. With that, that is the end of this chapter. So next time we will be talking about chapter 19, so make sure you read that, and we will get there next time. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to 3 other podcasts as well. Tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is always a really big help. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes, or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We love hearing from you guys, so thanks so much. We do have one bit of feedback this week. I'm going to throw it to Karen. It's something from Dr. Gina.
Yes, Dr. Gina at _Cersei1, who we also got some feedback from last week, was replying to our episode with the interview with Sarwat and said, excellent episode, utterly delighted with the segment detailing the edits leading up to the Shadow Magic series. And I'm so glad we got a few people who really liked the interview with Sarwat and everything that we talked about. So, and Sarwat's been very kind about listening to our reviews of his book. And I'm like, that's scary. I don't know that I could do that.
Right.
But, you know, obviously we had wonderful things to say about it. So I'm really, really happy that he got to listen to us get really excited over the book. So
yeah,
that's agreed. Awesome.
Thank you, Sarwat. Okay, so that pretty much wraps us up here. Next week, we will be talking about Percy Jackson's birthday and the Battle of Manhattan. Because, you know, it's that time of year and this is what we do.
I'm really mad that we're not talking about the Red Pyramid chapter 18, because that would have been perfect for his birthday.
It would have been.
Yeah.
It's all right.
So if you have anything that you want to talk about in regards to his birthday or the Battle of Manhattan, let us know.
Yeah, we haven't entirely figured out all the pieces of what we're talking about next week, but we thought in general, an episode kind of celebrating his birthday and remembering all the things that have happened on that day.
Yeah.
Is kind of important.
Yeah.
So that is always good fun for us. And yes, we will be talking about the Red Pyramid chapter 19. So make sure you read that. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.